Same thing that I feel like Montana has every year under Hawk is really good defense. They don't have the offensive weapons to play behind it. They don't have an offense that is scaring anyone, and it almost.
Welcome to the official podcast of FCS Fans Nation with your hosts, Kyler Neal, Matthew Frazee, and Jamie Williams.
FCS Fans Nation, good evening. After another good weekend of football coming at you, here's Jamie. We got Kyler. Unfortunately, no Matt, but we do have a special guest. Don't adjust your monitors. This is, for the first time, former long snapper for the University of Rhode Island, current Believe in FCS podcast host, current draft guru, current friend of Sean Anderson, we'll see later. Current hack. Current, lots of current things going on for Mr. Joe DeLeon. Thank you for joining us, Joe. How you doing on this Sunday night?
I'm doing great. I just finished doing the FBS stream that we do on the Hack City channel, and this is something that we've kind of flirted with and talked about me coming on and just trying to work out the time zone difference and the you know, the schedules and the hectic nature of the college football season. But no, I'm excited, man. Like I talked to you so much, Jamie, during the week that, you know, this had to happen at some point. No, Sean is at a wedding of all things to be at, but it's just me, and I'm excited to be talking about FCS with you guys.
That's great. We're good to have you. So we are going to kick right off with our Big Seven and get right into our questions. And let's talk about a great FCS football weekend.
The top seven FCS topics of the week. This is the Big Seven.
All right, we're going to kick straight into it today. Sacramento State pulled one off in the last minute and a half against Idaho yesterday after blowing a pretty large lead. Andrew Markham wants to know, can Sacramento State maintain this level of success with the turnovers they've been having lately in these past big games? Joe, you're the guest. What do you think about how Sacramento State's performed over the last few weeks?
Yeah, Sacramento State's been really funky to watch. And Sean and I kind of talked about this on our preview show and the recap show that we did last week, where like they keep coming back into these games where they're getting their asses kicked. And it's not so much getting their asses kicked, but they fall in these deficits. And it's kind of like what TCU's doing right now at the FBS level. It is tough to maintain that level of success. And the turnovers you talked about, absolutely concerning. There's only so many games that you can maintain this luck to put yourself back into a football game. At a certain point, you're going to run out of that luck. When they play, you know, in the playoff, they're going to obviously make the playoff. But for them to win their conference, to make it in the playoff, to win out the rest of the games, they can't be doing this. They can't be turning the ball over as much as they are. It is not winning football to be doing these things. The one thing I will say that I always point to with programs that have this tendency, it does show a sign of resilience. Like it does show a sign of toughness to fight back into a football game. Like you have to be a really cohesive unit, a really strong, tough team that's willing to fight together to get back into a game. But I know I totally think that the turnovers are starting to turn into a bit of an issue for Sacramento State after this one.
I don't know so much. So of course they're turning the ball over. That is never going to be a good thing if you're playing a South Dakota State, a North Dakota State, some of these powerhouses in the playoffs. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Sac State has, you know, gone a big fat 0-2 in the playoffs. You know, getting a seed, getting just torched, and now they're not having any type of national respect because you got to earn that respect in the playoffs. But, I mean, when they're turning the ball over, they're up by a lot, right? They get a little bit of a cushion to where they're like, all right, as long as we don't make these mistakes in the fourth quarter, we kind of have a nice cushion. I think they were up by like 21 against, or pretty close to it against Idaho State. Something like that. I think it was 24-7. So they had a big little bit of room, and then they try and get cute. if they're playing Weber, and I believe it's either – yeah, it's this week coming up. Yeah. So if they're playing in Weber, you're not going to be able to do that. That's their toughest game left on the schedule. They do have UC Davis, who's actually looking pretty fantastic on this back half of the schedule. So those are going to be two teams where you're definitely not going to want to have those hiccups. But overall, if another team can't stop Scottabo, right, you're going to have some success. So it's one of those things. Yeah, they're turning the ball over a lot. They threw three picks or something like that versus my bad team. But the good news is we were down like 35, so it didn't really matter. They threw a couple picks right here. Yeah, they were up by 20, something similar to that. So they get a little bit of that room of cushion. Now, if it's a close game and they're having these cute mistakes, yeah, that's going to bite them in the ass, and that's probably what we're going to end up seeing in the playoffs. But as of right now, I don't think it's as big of a deal because they're up by a little bit. They just got to keep that momentum.
Yes, I feel like they've kind of abandoned their pass, even though it's not an awful pass offense. Asher O'Hara seemed to just be the guy yesterday. I mean, he just ran for another 130, 140 yards along with Scottabo, who's just under 1,000 yards. So if you can't stop them, you know, 6-7 yards a carry, they're just going to pound the ball. And I think that they realized they needed to get back to that after trying to, you know, not quote unquote get cute and throw the ball, because it is obviously you need to have a balanced offense, and they've had some success throwing the ball. But at the same time, you know, Dunaway has run, like you said, run into those interception problems. So they've got to be able to curb some of that, because when you meet up in the playoffs, it's razor thin margin the further you get. And I know they've been able to beat a couple of good teams. Like you said, played with fire too much, you're going to get burned.
And I think that Weber game too is like a really good, you know, important one, where that may be their first like serious opportunity for them to lose a game. And you know, obviously it's a huge matchup, but Weber's been really freaking good on defense. Like that's been their calling card this year, is how they've played defensively. If you turn the ball over against a team like that runs the ball as well as they do, you're not going to be able to get back into that game. They're going to control the clock. They're capable of doing that. And I also think about, you know, they make it to the playoffs, say they run the table and win out. You turn the ball over against a team like North Dakota State or South Dakota State, say they end up matching up with them later on, they're done. They're not staying into a football game with those programs. Good football teams are going to take advantage of that. And I'm not saying that their schedule hasn't been good, but you got to fix that stuff now. You know, you got to get that stuff out of your system now, and hopefully they do. They get that out of their system.
Will be fun to watch, because Weber State does have some ball hawks too, right?
Right.
And Dunaway, I mean, he's not the best passer. It is what it is. But you know, all he's doing is throwing the ball to keep the defense honest. So then Scottabo, O'Hara, they can all do whatever they want on the ground. But yeah, against the South Dakota State and North Dakota State, I'd be a little more nervous. And even Weber, because they are ball hawks and they're resilient, and their offense is quite a bit improved this year. Mm-hmm. But I mean, with like Idaho, with me, with my team, they were up by so much. I'm like, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's at this point it's cheap lessons because they keep winning. So
yeah,
you know, we'll see how that fares them in a tough place to play like Stewart Stadium this weekend. We go from the Big Sky to the Valley. Brendan from South Dakota State, of course, also known as Thumper. Definitely Brendan, though. If Southern Illinois, North Dakota, and Illinois State all end up at 7-4, which ones? Could be multiple, are sitting at home, Kyler?
If they're 7-4, I do think UND is in. Right? They would have that win over Southern Illinois, which does help, right? So if they're at 7-4, that is that tiebreaker. I don't think they play Illinois State this year, right? That's the one game where they're not playing. So that's going to be a little interesting, right? Because that means Illinois State's probably going to have a few big upsets. And those ranked wins are pretty important in that committee's eyes. But I mean, are any of them? I think UND probably has the best chance to get to 7-4. The other teams is going to be a little bit tougher to win out. But yeah, I think out of those three, potentially even two of them, maybe even Illinois State and UND would get in. I don't know. Southern Illinois does have that Northwestern win, which the committee does love an FBS win. Now they went 0-2 versus their other FCS competition, and one of them was a blowout, horrible loss to Incarnate Word. But the committee loves an FBS win. I mean, it's good for the FCS if you have a team in there and they can keep showing plays of, look what they did to Northwestern. So I don't know. Maybe you get all three, but I doubt it, because I don't think the Missouri Valley is as strong this year. I don't think they can, you know, put their cap on, this is the toughest conference by far, like they have in the past. But definitely UND, they would have a top five schedule from what I believe. They'd have the win over Southern Illinois. Again, I don't think they play Illinois State. You guys can correct me if you look it up. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I probably pick UND and Illinois State would probably get in.
Yeah, I don't really who is Illinois State like really beaten? Like I'm looking at their schedule.
Valparaiso.
Right, like is that their signature win is Southern or Eastern Illinois maybe? Like, and that's not even a good football program. Like I can't even, I'm looking at this and I don't see any games that excite me about Illinois State. Like they're a good football program, but I don't think that they have the resume. You know, Southern Illinois, that Northwestern, when you talk about, is huge. North Dakota has been great in a lot of these games. And heck, if they finished that football game against South Dakota State, they almost were in a position to win that game. They didn't win it, and South Dakota State's just so much better than them. But I don't think Illinois State has anything to really hang their hat on and say, like, hey, this is what we've done this season. They've got a lot of holes on that resume. I think Southern Illinois, out of all these, though, probably have the best resume because of that Northwestern win, which you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, Oh, Jamie, you can go. I was going to say, but it is a little interesting, their last three games of the year. So we would, in this case, we'd have them lose to South Dakota State, probably beat Youngstown and beat Western Illinois. And then they do have that loss of Southern Illinois, and their best win is probably UNI. Yeah.
You know, UNI is bad this year. So it's like, how much does that really, really mean? They haven't done anything. They're going to be a really fake 7-4 team. And hell, I know everyone knows that I'm a CAA homer, but like if you have a 7-4 CAA team, please put them in over Illinois State. Illinois State, what they've got nothing. This is the weakest schedule. Their resume, it's soft. It's like a C-plus resume.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying that because the 7-4 CAA team is going to be Rhode Island, but we'll ignore that.
Probably. Or William & Mary.
Yeah, well, you never know. Southern Illinois has to win their last two games. They're off this week, and then they get the Bison at home. So that's the best possible outcome for them against the Bison, is get an extra week to get healthy and get ready for them. Mm-hmm. I'm not even gonna say they could probably win their last game at Youngstown, because they're the most Jekyll and Hyde team I've ever seen. Like Illinois State used to be. We used to think they were like a top 10 to 15 team back, you know, after Marshawn Coppers left, when they were definitely top two, and we keep waiting for them to break out, and they're the opposite of you and I, where you and I just keep surprising people. Illinois State kept pissing people off and disappointing them. That's our Southern Illinois now. I mean, maybe they beat Youngstown, but they have to beat North Dakota State. So that's kind of where they lay.
Unless there's complete chaos, I don't think there should be, you know, more than three teams from the Valley even getting in. I don't think the conference is that good this year. People are yelling at me on Twitter. They're yelling at me on Facebook saying, why are you just a Missouri Valley hater? I'm like, every single year since I've been on this, I've said they're by far the best conference. They're not this year. They have no good outside of SDSU and NDSU, which insanely, they're probably two of the favorite national title contenders, right? They probably do have two of the best four teams in the nation. We may have a full Missouri Valley matchup in the finals. That is a very, very potential chance. Outside of that, UND is okay. I think they're solid. I don't think they're great. I don't think they're good. I think they're solid, a playoff caliber team, anywhere from an 18 to a 26. I would think they should be ranked anywhere in there. But other than that, like, yeah, it doesn't look good in the Valley this year. People are hating on me.
And they shouldn't be. I mean, there's no depth. There's absolutely no depth. Like, when you've got these two teams that are just kicking the shit out of everyone. Am I allowed to curse, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can say whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, you're good.
Don't offer that up to me. I will go crazy with it. No, but in all seriousness, like, there's no depth. Like, the South Dakota State and North Dakota State, per usual, are the ones feasting on these other teams, but it's just a lot of, like, mid-tier, mediocre programs. I just think it's like the SEC, like the superiority of the Missouri Valley Football Conference, of, like, not wanting to admit that there's no depth. And you want to point to if you're a North Dakota State or South Dakota State fan, you want to be able to point to your record and say, like, oh, these are meaningful wins. But, like, who are you really beating? They're still really good football programs. They're just beating up on mediocre teams this year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Valley definitely having a little bit of a down year outside of the top two. Doesn't mean you're hating on them. We're going to bounce back to the Big Sky. Speaking of sensitive fan bases, do you see Bobby Hawk's days with the Grizz football coach coming to an end? See what I mean? He's finished no better than third in the Big Sky and hasn't made it past the quarterfinals. Pretty glad that, unfortunately, we didn't win the national championship last year, but I am glad to say that our last FCS victory as an FCS team was over Montana. Joe, what do you think about Bobby?
It's tough when you've got, like, a long-standing coach like this that's you know, it's been around for a while, but I think there's some truth to it. Like, there is something needs to be considered here because they have been inconsistent in big games. Like, I feel like we always prop up Montana and we talk about them ad nauseum about like why they're a top five team. And they were at one point, I remember at the beginning of the year, some people were saying that they were the best team in the country. And I was, it's like, why are we like crowning them the best team in the country? Their offense is really inconsistent and there's a lot of problems that it has. And it's the same thing that I feel like Montana has every year under Hawk, is really good defense. They don't have the offensive weapons to play behind it. They don't have an offense that is scaring anyone. And I forget which show I said this on. I think it might've been the FCS show or the FBS show. I actually almost consider it to be like Iowa, Kirk Ferentz. Like, Kirk Ferentz has been there for so long and he's produced so many good defensive teams. But at a certain point, the gimmicks go out the window. If you're not scoring points, you're obviously going to lose. You are relying on turnover luck to win games. And I think Ferentz is going to get fired. And I think maybe Hawk needs to happen. The standard for Montana football is very high. And you should not be content with four losses every season. They should be in the conversation for a national championship.
Maybe we need to change this standard, right? They haven't won a Big Sky title since 2009. I mean, they've been to one semifinal in 2011 when it got stripped away because they were being a little naughty. I mean, other than that, maybe we just have to realize Hauk, he is arguably one of the most successful coaches in the FCS historically. How many titles has he been to? What, five or six, but he's lost all of them. So he's been there, right? The big games, what Joe just talked about. You got to win some of those big games. But there's a difference from what the Big Sky was in the early 2000s to what it is right now. It is way more difficult ever since 2018, kind of when he started coming back. And now you have Eck, you have Jay Hill, who's doing crazy things, Troy Taylor. I mean, even Aaron Best, he's been to a national title by himself. So the Big Sky is way different than it was back in 2009 when they were running through everyone, getting an extremely high seed, having people come to Missoula in the playoffs. It's a tough place to play in December. I will tell you that. Now you got to win some of these conference games. And I think Hauk is a phenomenal defensive special teams coach. He gets his teams riled up. The special teams has always been impressive. The defense, their scheme is phenomenal. I said this in about two episodes ago. There's one thing I don't like what Montana's continuing to do. Follow this North Dakota State model. North Dakota State, I get it. People yell at me all the time when they're trying to correct me and go, no, he does recruit regionally. Okay, yes, but you're getting a lot of your skill players from the South. You're in Georgia. You're in Texas. You're in Florida. You are going outside of the realm of your own North Dakota State. There's 15 players on North Dakota State from North Dakota. Why? Because it's not a giant talent pool of players in North Dakota. The population's smaller. Just simple math will show you do not have the same caliber of players. Montana has 50-something players on their roster from the state of Montana. I get it. They're prideful. That is awesome. They will play hard against Montana State. They are going to play hard against that rival because they've grown up their whole life being a Montana guy. Unfortunately, they don't have the same skill players that I think some of the other teams do that are recruiting out of California, Arizona, Washington, Oregon, Utah, Texas. I mean, look at what Montana State's doing. They just grabbed another kid from, what, Frisco, Texas. They're grabbing kids from everywhere, right? They need these skill players. Then you need your mountain men, your rips of the world playing on defense. So, I think Montana, I don't know if it's a pride thing. Hauk probably needs to go back to the drawing board, change their offensive style because you're not – the game's changed. The game has evolved from even 15 years ago. Also, the players are completely different. Hauk is a very mean coach, right? Like, his players aren't allowed to really be on social media. They can't post fun videos. They can't do all of that. Unfortunately, there's a new set of players. They're younger. People want to have some fun. They want to post. They want to have a big following on social media. And it doesn't seem like you're going to get that type of level from Hauk. He's pretty strict with what a player can do nowadays. I don't think he's in the hot seat by any means. He's still the first or second most successful coach in Montana history. I get their fans are complaining, but look who you had before. You were a bubble team. Now you're at least in the national spotlight again. You're going back to your roots. It's probably just going to take a little bit. Probably have to change recruiting. And maybe Bobby Hauk has to put his pride aside and have a little more fun in this game. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Look at Eck. Eck is having a fantastic time with Idaho.
He's dicking around. It's hilarious. I love Eck is my favorite coach already. My favorite.
Yeah, he's FCS fun.
Coach.
He's running down the hall. He's posting stuff. He went to the bars with the Stein drinking out of it. Like, that's a coach people want to play for right now.
So, absolutely. Yeah,
I think that's part of it too. And I think, like, you both hit all the points that I had. The other thing I'll say is Montana fans need to come into the current time frame, just because back when they were winning titles in the 90s and as they were really good in the 2000s, the depth of the FCS from a year-to-year basis isn't what it is now. You would have two or three teams that were really good each year, but now there's 6 to 8 teams that are dangerous. And in the Big Sky, there's another just 5 in your own conference that are dangerous. So I think they need to kind of pump their brakes on the expectations too, because like you said, they haven't won anything since 2009. Like, win something. I mean, Hawk has brought that program back up to a level where the expectations can be there, but there's still those extra steps to be made. And I know that they just watched their most hated rival make the championship game in Frisco, so that's burning on them too. And they're already behind them again, and they're falling behind. They've lost their 3 tough games. So I think the fan base needs to just pump the brakes. I'm not a Hawk fan, but you know, he has re-elevated that program, and let's see if he could just another couple of recruiting cycles, can he bring it just to that next level? And if he can't, then in 2 years, let's talk about should Montana move on. But I always say, if you're going to get rid of him, who are you going to bring in that's going to do a better job? Excuse me.
Chope. just steal Chope from the old MSU days and really piss off Montana.
And from the big boys, we're going to go down to the Patriot League. We have a question again from Andrew Markham. After the showing of the Holy Cross versus Fortin game, which was freaking crazy, with Holy Cross winning on a 2-point conversion, great call. Do both get in, or with the inability to defend by either side, is it a one-bid conference? I still don't think that Holy Cross has an inability to defend. I think they've got a pretty strong defense. It's just Fordham's got an offense that will just score on anybody in the nation. Any defense in the FCS, Fordham is going to score on you. But the problem for Fordham, and we talked about it last week when we were making our picks, and I said I will never learn to go with the better defense, and I clearly didn't because I picked Fordham, is they can't stop anybody, and eventually that bites you. It bit them in their FBS game that they should have won. It bit them yesterday. And I love Holy Cross going for the win. There was another game where I loved it too. Scores on the last play of the game. You go for the win. It didn't work out. Sorry, Joe. But I love that Coach Fleming went for the win. I'm not trying to bag on Rhode Island, but Coach Fleming went for the win.
Right.
In a tough place to play with the momentum. And Holy Cross did the same thing. It worked for them. If it didn't work for them, their coach would be getting called a goat. And it's like, why not just take it to the next overtime? You know, Fleming, why not take it in overtime? Also, why not try to win the game? So I like how that went down, but I do think with Holy Cross winning, I do think that does make it a one-bid conference. But, you know, a lot can still happen in the next few weeks. What do you guys think?
I think there's an argument to be made still for Fordham, because I know their secondary stinks. Like, their secondary, like you just talked about, it's not surprising that a Patriot League team doesn't have the athletes to cover anybody. And they're going to get smoked by whoever either of these teams play in the playoff. I still don't think Holy Cross is that good. I think for them, you know, to give up this many points is not concerning, but like, how are they going to really match up against like a Big Sky or a Missouri Valley Football Conference or a CAA team in the playoff? It's, you know, obviously good for their resume, and they've got a lot of nice players. And I'm a fan of Sluka, their quarterback, who actually might have some NFL aspirations as a player. My co-host Ryan on the draft show texted me about him and said he really likes him. But like, it's so hard for me to buy into a Patriot League team, because the competition and those kids that you're going up against, they're just not athletic. Like, they're not as athletic as these other big FCS conferences. They're not as talented. They're just not. It's fun to see a good Holy Cross team. It's fun to see 53-52. Like, that's really, really exciting. And it's fun, explosive football. But Patriot League is just not a competitive conference. and the talent is just nowhere near up to par with the other conferences.
I hope we see two, right? I think we kind of all talked about this game for the last like 5 weeks ago, and the only way we're probably going to see two is if Fordham pulls off that upset, because then they would get the auto bid, and Holy Cross, they at least have a pretty decent out-of-conference resume with their FBS win, where Fordham, yeah, they lost on a last-minute play to their FBS team. But the fun thing about this one is they are 2-0 versus the CAA, right? Mm-hmm. And now, they weren't the best CAA teams. They beat Monmouth, who's right. an average CAA team. And then they beat Albany, who is a bad CAA team. But Albany just smoked. Who did they just play and beat like 56-7? It was ridiculous. The worst team in the CAA. So Stony Brook, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, but I mean,
59-14 was the score.
It was a horrible, horrible game. The two worst CAA teams. And normally you think it'd be a little more competitive than that. But I mean, that just shows you Fordham has an amazing offense. They can score on anyone. Probably not a South Dakota State or North Dakota State or some of these other big boy teams, but not a lot of teams can score on them anyway. So who cares? But I mean, the bubble is, this is going to sound really weird to say, cause it makes no sense. Even when I'm about to say it, the bubble is extremely weak and extremely strong this year. What I mean is there's a wide variety of teams. That's the strong aspect. There's probably 15 teams right now that are on the bubble, where last year at this time, there's maybe only five teams. Now, it's weak because there's not a lot of amazing teams. Outside maybe the top 15, I think there's a pretty big drop-off. And that's where I think the bubble's weak, but it's strong because there's a lot of like similar teams, and there's a multiple plethora of them. And Fordham has scored on everyone. They've just been able to do really whatever they wanted. They beat two CAA teams, and that's where maybe we can get some love, because they at least did go 2-0 versus their CAA out of conference schedule. Now, if they would have beat, what was it, Buffalo? Did they? What? No,
it was Ohio.
Buffalo. Holy Cross beat Buffalo, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, if they would have beat Ohio on that last second play, you know, we'd probably be looking at, all right, they are a lock. Both teams are probably a lock, but as of right now, I don't know. I'm pretty sure the Patriot League, just like every single year, is a one bid league. Even though Fordham may be better sent than some of the teams that do get in, I do think they're a second round potential team, depending on the matchup. If they get an NEC team, I think Fordham's going to beat an NEC team. If they get one of the bubble teams from the CA, there's a chance they can get in a shootout and win. There's a chance they can get a shootout and lose, but at least it would be an entertaining shootout. If they get maybe a Big South champ, there's a chance Fordham can beat the Big South champ. So, I mean, that's where it is going to be fun to watch. Ultimately, Patriot League is typically a one-bid league. Probably is going to stay a one-bid league, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's all about the matchup. And I just hope Fordham gets in for one reason. And, Joe, thank you and Sean for pulling this up. That solid mustache on Tim DeMratt, that needs to be in the playoffs.
It's a Gardner Minshew style.
Getting there.
Yeah, it's kind of, and I don't know if he's got the juice to grow the full Gardner Minshew one, but like the it's like Top Gun-ish. I applaud Tim DeMratt and his stunningly good looks and in his mustache. That was why I was picking Fordham in this game, and I'm really sad that Holy Cross didn't lose, because as we know, I hate Holy
you
Cross.
You hate Holy Cross,
and yeah, I hate the Patriots,
and that's okay. We've all got our hates. You know,
do you hate them because, you know, the Patriot League didn't recruit you, so you had to go to Rhode Island?
What do you? I didn't. Well, actually, my grades weren't good enough to go to a Patriot League school. I was getting recruited by Lehigh, but then I sent them my transcript, and they were
totally
like,
trolling. Rhode Island's a good school, man.
Yeah, I know. No, Rhode Island's not a good school. I'll be the first person to tell you it's
better than Eastern.
I saw him play against us, buddy. Yeah.
I mean, we were it was a fun football team. We were good for the 1 year that I was there, but like academically, I didn't learn anything there. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. I wish I went to a better school. I absolutely do.
We love the honesty. We love the honesty. From the Patriot League, we'll just go a little further south. SoCon cannibalizing itself again at the end of the season. We'll see. Are they? Who's real and who's not? Andrew Markham again and Brendan Lukey. Our friend Thumper, who's definitely Brendan. I don't know that it's going to cannibalize itself. I think there's four quality, solid teams that right now are beating up on each other. Samford, for all intents and purposes, They're the unbeaten team in the conference.
I don't know how that happened. I'm like dumbfounded by how that happened.
Yeah, same. And, you know, we think after last week, okay, that was the big showdown, Chattanooga-Mercer. Chattanooga wins by 20 points. They're definitely the top team. And then they go and lose to Furman. And I know, Kevin, if you're listening, FCS Nation Radio 1, everybody, if you're listening, Kevin, I know the SoCon cannibalizes itself and everybody beats everybody. So far they have. I got it. But this year the SoCon has four really valid arguments. So I'd like to think that they're probably going to get three bids based off of what happens the last few weeks. But history tells me they're going to get two. But I think there are four quality teams that should get three bids.
Here's the difference between this year and maybe last year and all the last recent years about the SoCon. Normally, they were all the same caliber of team. They were good to mediocre. No one was really bad. No one was great. No one was exceptional. So at the end of the year, you had a lot of 6-5, 7-4, 5-6 teams. And then Kevin Marshall, FCS Radio, he always said, well, they cannibalize themselves because they're so equal. They're so good across the board. And he makes fun of the Big Sky, the CAA, the Missouri Valley, where you have really good teams and really shit teams. That is the SoCon right now. You have four really good teams and four really shit teams. I mean, that is what it is. I don't think the SoCon is going to cannibalize himself because Wofford sucks. ETSU sucks. Citadel sucks. WCU sucks. VMI sucks. That is the difference. Chattanooga, really good. Mercer, really good. Samford, no clue how that happened. Really good. Furman, they look really good. So at the end of the day, I don't see it because there's a big gap finally this year with the SoCon. It's not the same conference from top to bottom like everyone likes to pride themselves on. Nope. You finally have a CA type of conference. You finally have a Big Sky type of conference. You finally have a Missouri Valley conference. You have four legit teams. The rest suck. So guess what? I don't think it's going to cannibalize itself. They have 3-4 bids, in my opinion. Right now, if I had to create a playoff field right now, I'd put four teams from the SoCon in. I really would. I would put two from the Missouri Valley, five or four from the Big Sky. Right now, about five from the CA, four from the SoCon. Everyone else gets one bid. That's kind of how I would do it. So, but yeah, I mean, we'll see. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's the big difference this year.
So first, I just have to ask a question. How did two people ask a question? Like, I'm legitimately wondering, like, how did Andrew and Brendan both ask the same question?
If they're similar enough.
Yeah. Okay.
We shrunk it down.
I wasn't sure if that, like, they're really close friends. Like, guys, let's ask a question together. And they like pitched it together.
Thumper does that. He'll copy and paste because he has no original thoughts himself.
Except for chocolate milk.
No, I'm just joking, man. I love you.
Brendan is going to kick your ass in Frisco.
Oh my God, he would eat me. I'm so terrified.
If anyone would take anyone down, it would be Brendan because he's I was shocked by how big he was. I don't know what I was expecting. Dude. When I met him in person, I was like, oh my God, he's as big as Sean.
Oh yeah, he went up to me and was like, oh, they don't grow very big in Eastern Washington, do they? I'm like, I'm from Seattle area, but yes, you're right. We do not grow very big over there.
That's hilarious. But so my thing with this is I think that the most legit team, the one that stands out to me the most is Chattanooga. Now, I know they lost this weekend. And I was doing a little digging. I didn't know that Alem Ford, if I'm pronouncing that right, was hurt. And we know how important he is for that rushing attack. And apparently he's going to be back next week. That's what the game notes say. It's probably an injury that wasn't reported until game day that he was going to be missing it. And I don't think anyone knew. Like, I had no idea. I think that roster with Ford and Devonta Maxwell and McClendon Curtis – that roster is really freaking good. Like, those are multiple draft picks or NFL guys just in general on that roster. If you get him back, absolutely, I think that they're the best team. It just sucks. Like, bad timing. Fordham's, one of those teams, if you're caught off guard, you're dealing with an injury, they're obviously going to take advantage of that. Like, they're just like a sneaky, annoying team like that. But I think Chattanooga definitely is the best. It's just got to get Ford on the field. They can't run the ball clearly without him.
Yeah, they seem to struggle. I didn't know that either. I just kind of caught little bits and pieces of that game. But, yeah, they only ran for 84 yards, and 28 of them came from Preston Hutchinson, quarterback. So that's a big hole. It's a good point out by you, Joe. So, yeah, a healthy Chattanooga, maybe we have a different result last week, but you also play who's on the field, so get them back and win the rest of your games and get in. But it's a quality win for Furman. And from the SoCon, we'll go to our WAC Sun. Want to get a little bit more in depth on the WAC Sun, listen to WAC Sun Weekly featuring Rev Dustin Helton, Will Seiler, and Brandon Owens. I'm sure their podcast will be out in the next day or so as well. But for us, we have a question from Jason Plotkin. Now that Stephen F. Austin, Abilene Christian, and Austin P. all lost this week, who moves to the top of the A-Sun WAC ratings, and what do we think about Eastern Kentucky? Joe, you have any thoughts on what is the heck going on in the WAC and A-Sun and all that crap?
Yeah, I think all the teams that we've talked about on the show today and all the conferences, I think that the WAC A-Sun situation is probably the most perplexing. Like, I legitimately wish I could sit here and say who I think is the best team. I wanted it to be, and I thought it was going to be Stephen F. Austin, but there's a lot of inconsistencies. Xavier Shepherd and Trey Self are fantastic. Like, I love that pairing. Like, they're so talented. Gibson. But Xavier Gibson. Xavier Shepherd's the Kennesaw State Kennesaw, kid. Yep. what are the odds that there's two guys with the name Xavier that are really good players? But to that point, though, is like, on paper, they look like the most talented roster, but then you just have all these like random teams. I think that they might end up being the weakest. This might be the weakest circumstance for a conference to put out a team into the playoff field, because there's just, it's not really like a team that stands out above the rest. And like, it's like, how much better is every team than the other? It's very, very minimal. It's very, very, very mediocre situation for them right now.
Yeah. Every time I think somebody's the best team, they lose.
Yeah.
And maybe back where, maybe we circled all the way back again, where maybe it's Eastern Kentucky again. But I think whoever it is a one bid conference between the two of them. Only one team's getting in between that conglomeration of crap. And then they're going to lose in the first round, whoever it is. You know, if it's Eastern Kentucky, they're probably going to get either a UTM or a SEMO, you know, regionality. And I think both of those teams are better than Eastern Kentucky. They do have the wild card. You know, I think a lot of people love Parker McKinney. I think he's got some good characteristics. I think they've got a good team. So I think right now, and that, of course, will change probably next week, that Eastern Kentucky is now the best team in the WAC Sun conglomeration of crap, is what I'm going to call them.
So this, I'm going to go on a Rev rant, because Rev called me out on his WAC Sun podcast, because last week I said there's a question on what the hell's going on with the WAC Sun, and I said, unfortunately, they both stink and they should just drop football altogether. It's a failed experiment. And Rev got really upset and said that was the worst take of all time. The only thing worse than my take is the WAC Sun Football Conference. This thing sucks. I have no clue what's going on. Not one good team is coming from this conference. But what's going to happen right now? Central Arkansas is still undefeated in conference play. Now they're 4-4 overall. They're undefeated in conference play. They have SFA and Eastern Kentucky left, and then Jacksonville State. I don't really think that one's going to count either way. So they have two games left that if they win, that is your WAC Sun champ. They'll be undefeated in conference play. They'll have the stronger strength of schedule. They will win. Now, if they lose the EKU, well, now we're going to have a little bit of issues, because I have no clue. If Abilene Christian somehow wins out, because they're still undefeated right now, I believe, in conference play, which is ridiculous. Because the WAC is extremely weak. The A-Sun is better than the WAC. I will say that. The A-Sun is quite a bit better than the WAC, in my opinion. But, those are kind of your two front runners right now, because as of right now, they're the only ones that haven't lost a conference game. And it looks like that power metric is only going to be used as tiebreakers. It's still going to be your overall record or your conference record in the WAC, your conference record in the A-Sun, and then they use kind of all these different tiebreakers to see who's the actual champ. Right now, it's Central Arkansas if the season ended today, in my opinion. You got to take out those out-of-conference games. Yeah, the Bears right there, those purple stripes. But, I mean, we're going to find out this week. If EKU beats them, they're probably in the front-runner seat. But, again, I have no clue how this fake double conference thing's even working out, to be honest. There's been, like, no real rhyme or reason. It's like, we're going to vote for our champ, you'll vote for your champ, and we'll figure it out. Pat on the back. Stop it.
But like, so I agree with like a lot of what you're saying there. But on top of that, can these idiots put together like a good standing table on like a someone's website? This is the hardest goddamn thing for me to. This is terrible. This is not this stupid power rankings graphic that's linked on the website is the worst piece of crap that I've ever seen from a Division I conference. This is actually a joke. Like, I didn't know this until today because Sean and I don't talk about the WAC and the ASUN because none of these teams are relevant. Like, we talk about the big dogs because we've got so many other things we have to cover on Hack City now. But like, this is a joke. This is ridiculous. This isn't a conference. This is like a weird partnership, and I hate it. I absolutely hate it. Someone buy the other out. I don't like it. I agree with a lot of what you said, Kyler. Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I was super excited when the WAC announced. I was super excited when the ASUN announced because all the teams they went after, I'm like, those are going to be solid conferences in a few years. And then all of a sudden all their powers left. Now there's confusion. Now, you know, people are going to the CAA. People are going to the FBS. It is a cluster. I have no clue. I hate it. It was a great experiment. I think it's already a failed experiment. Just give up.
Yeah.
Give up.
100%.
I think the overall arcing thing is, we love our Wax On podcast. We love the Rev. We love Will. We love Brandon. The conference itself, trash.
Yeah, just do one conference. Be the ASUN. Be right. The WAC. Don't have this cluster where no one plays each other and we're going to announce a champion for no reason. Just be one. You don't have that many teams anyway. Just be one.
Right, and that's what most other conferences in these situations do. Like, if you don't have like the proper amount of teams to field a conference, your programs will go play in different conferences. Like, that's how this should be done. It shouldn't. I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
So let's get something more positive to wrap up our Big Seven, as we've talked about a lot of the
Rev's
conferences.
Rev's going to hate me on Twitter.
Yeah, he is. So let's wrap that all up with a question from Brandon Owens. Pretty simple as of right now. What are your updated seeds? And I think we don't have to go 1 through 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, but I think we can all agree that South Dakota State, North Dakota State, Montana State, Sacramento State, and Weber State right now have a seed as we sit today. Do anybody disagree with that?
No.
Nope.
All right. So that would leave three. Does Holy Cross get a seed?
If they win out, they probably do. I know Joe hates that. but if they win out, they're undefeated. They got an FBS win and, you know, a fringe top 25 team. They're probably a seed. We've seen Patriot Leagues get seeds before. We've seen other teams from like Kennesaw that had a weak schedule get seeds before. Mm. Holy Cross, undefeated, probably getting a seed.
Joe, what CAA team do you think right now has the best shot at a seed?
I guess William and Mary, and like, it's going to talk about cannibalization in a conference. Like, the CAA, I think, fits that description perfectly because we just keep getting all these guys like knocking each other down. You think, oh, Delaware is the team this week, and then Delaware loses to William and Mary, and then this past week they lost to Elon. Like, they're no longer the team that we thought that they were. And William and Mary, they look like the team right now, but then they could go and lose this upcoming week. And it's impossible to predict. And I thought Elon was done, and now here they are. I thought Richmond might've been done, and then here they are. It's impossible to predict. I think if somebody does get the seed, it just, as long as William and Mary wins out, it's probably them. If Rhode Island won, it would have been them. You know, like, there's no homerism there. Like, they have probably the best schedule. If Delaware, you know, still the same circumstance, Delaware losing to Elon, Rhode Island would have been in the best position with that William and Mary win. But now there's just a lot of question marks. And as long as William and Mary wins out, they'll probably be that seeded team in the CAA.
And the funny thing is, New Hampshire still sits at 5-0 in the conference. They play Richmond and Rhode Island back-to-back here coming up.
They haven't played anybody. And I was screaming about it on the show. I'm sure you guys remember if you tuned in. But like, them being at the top of the conference is an annoyance for me because, like, again, they haven't played anybody. But I guess that they're in the conversation somehow. Their record's not as good as some of these other programs. Their resume is definitely not as good, but they're kind of in the conversation.
And I even though I have no affinity to Richmond, but they've got a closing kick. If they can beat New Hampshire, Delaware, and William and Mary, two of which are at home, they're going to be right there too. So I think there's still a lot to be decided there. But I think, do we think that the CAA team has a seed at this point? Unless, or there's no lock, right?
I think there's a lot of good CAA teams. When I did my top 25, I put six in. Now, three of them are between 22 and 24, which means some of them are going to drop out because they're going to start playing each other finally. But I don't have anyone in my top 10. I think the CA, they don't have that elite team, but they have a lot of really good quality teams this year. So as of right now, I don't have a CA team getting a seed.
And I think if Chattanooga or Samford can run the table, you know, that's probably a seed. I mean, I think it's going to be a big fight. I mean, Idaho, I don't think Idaho's out of the question for a potential seed if they can win out. A close loss to Sacramento State being their only loss to an FCS team. So
I think Incarnate Word has a shot to get a seed.
Incarnate Word is probably as close to the next lock as you can get. It's just they did drop to Southeastern Louisiana. So
that hurts. You know,
that puts them right on the edge, but I think winning against Southern Illinois, which, as we all talk about, the ranked win at the time, the blowout of Nevada, as bad as Nevada is, so what? It's an FBS win. I think they're probably right now probably sitting at the six, and then it's a big debate, and I think it's going to be – I mean, it's going to go down to the wire on the last day of the season.
So my last three I have right now, of course, it can completely change. There's still 3 weeks left in the season. There's chaos that can happen. I have, and not in any particular order, but my last three, Holy Cross, Incarnate Word, and Samford. I jumped Samford up quite a bit this week. Jumped them up about 10 spots on my poll, which is pretty unheard of this late into the season. But when you look at the rest of their resume, you're like, they kind of do deserve it now. Even though I do agree with what Joe said earlier, I think Chattanooga is probably still the best team. I think if they played again, I would probably still bet on Chattanooga, which is weird. But I think as of right now, those are your teams. I mean, most of them are undefeated or mere minimum one loss. A lot of them have FBS wins, so it helps.
Joe, any pushback? Anybody else that we missed?
No, I think the only one I don't necessarily love is Samford, because like I mean they do have a great resume. I feel like they're the one of these things is not like the other. In that kind of bit there with they're like the worst of that grouping of teams that we've been talking about. If a CAA, I would like for like a William and Mary if they went out to fit in that spot. Like I agree. Really good conference, a lot of really competitive teams, not an elite one at the top. William and Mary is not the elite team right now at the top, but I think at the very least there should be a seeded CAA team. There just should be. It's just part of like the argument of like, you know, there should always be an SEC team in the conversation for the college football playoff. It seems a little bit obnoxious to think that way. And me, again, being a CAA homer, one will likely end up being in that conversation, feels like.
Real good Big 7 this week. Thank you guys for all the questions. And now we will move on to one of the most fun parts. Let's talk about tacos.
It's time to put your money where your mouth is. And if you're right, put some tacos in there too. This is Thompson's Taco Bets.
All right, this one is kind of lined straight up for our guest here. Joe, you know, is a big draft guy. Has I think you went to the Senior Bowl this past year, didn't you?
I did. I intend to likely go again this year, and I'm probably going to go to the Combine this year.
Yeah, so I mean, between Joe and his co-host Ryan and then Emery Hunt, those are the guys you want to hear about when you want to hear about more than just the Power Five guys. Stop always listening to Kuiper. Stop always staying with ESPN. Listen to Joe, listen to Ryan, listen to Emery. You will learn something. So our Thompson's Taco Bet, 20 FCS players were selected in the 22 draft, over or under 19.5 for 2023. And we're going to make Joe go last because he knows this better than us. And since I'm hosting today, I'm going to make Kyler go first.
Jerk. Well, what are you going to pick? So I know to pick the opposite.
Exactly. That's why you're going first.
So I don't know. So I didn't even look at this question. I probably should have maybe done a little more research. Was 20 a high year or a pretty average year? Was it a low year? I mean,
it was a that bounce back high. From previous. It's a little bit higher.
I was going to say that seems high to me, 20 FCS players drafted. But I know way back in the day, you know, there's quite a bit of FCS players drafted, especially out of the HBCUs. But I think I'm going to go – I think I just got to shoot for the under. That 20 number seems a little ridiculous, even though maybe it's not. You know, there's seven rounds. But I don't know. Yeah, that 20 number seems ridiculously high to me. I'm going to go under, and I actually think it's going to be closer to potentially even less than 15. I have no clue, but yeah, that's my point. That's my opinion. We'll see.
I mean, I'd like to just go opposite of you and go over, but I feel like it's an under year and maybe in that 15 range, like you said. You know, we've got a couple of guys, you know, that like the two guys from Chattanooga, Clinton Curtis and Devonta Maxwell. Yeah, I think they're both locks. I was kind of shocked to hear Joe earlier say Sluka was getting some look, but, you know, there's a lot of talent, but I don't know how much is going to make the NFL, and I don't think there's any top 2 to 3 round type guys, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm going to go under and kick it to the guy that knows.
Yeah, no, this is definitely going to be the under. Last year was a historic year for the amount of guys that were drafted. And if you think of the circumstance, there were a lot of guys at big programs that transferred down because of COVID. COVID gave extra eligibility and time for guys to train and develop. And there were a lot of guys that were sitting at home and just training in the garage and getting better. And we produced some absolute monsters because of those COVID circumstances. Plus the fact, again, the eligibility stuff was big. That was an outlier, total outlier. We're going to be closer to under 15, like you were talking about, Kyler. This year just doesn't really have that top tier guy. The one guy in the conversation is Tucker Kraft. And when I spoke to him before the season, he told me that he was going to enter if he's healthy, and he might not based on the injuries that he sustained. I have no idea where he's at right now. I'd love to ask him. I don't want to bother him with that question because he's in the middle of the season. But besides him, it's going to be a lot of day three guys, probably going to be under 15.
All right, there you go. We got a whole panel of unders.
Matt picked over.
Matt
just since
Matt
he didn't, yeah,
automatically he didn't gets the over because he's flying back from Vegas, and he drank enough to say the over. So really good taco bet. Good to hear about a little bit of a draft quality, and we'll on to our quick hitters.
Just because your question is answered quickly doesn't mean we don't care. These are the quick hit questions of the week.
All right, we'll open for a question from Joshua Hoppen, who is a South Dakota State fan. Is the Missouri Valley for the Jacks outright, and are the Sock Lukies playoff hopes dead? Kyler?
They're not dead yet, right? If they can upset NDSU, they're alive and well. But it's not looking good because I'm not betting on them to upset. And I do think the Jacks, it is their conference to take right now. We're still waiting for that normal SDSU mess up. They typically do that once a year. They're finally getting healthier, in my opinion. I don't see a mess up this year. I think the Valley is down compared to last year. It's not as competitive. I think Jacks are going to run the table.
Joe, any little comments on that?
Yeah, I think outright easily for South Dakota State. They got past their one big hurdle. The big hurdle is North Dakota State. You win that game, you win the freaking conference. Duh, baby, unless they get upset. I don't see that happening. Like we talked about earlier, there's a lot of thin teams underneath North Dakota State and the Missouri Valley Conference. So SIU, though, possibility. It's going to be an uphill battle for them because they need to stay close in that North Dakota State game, as we talked about. But it's certainly on the table because of that Northwestern win.
Yep, and the fact that they do still have that opportunity with North Dakota State. I don't think their playoff hopes are dead, right. But they're in the ICU.
Yeah.
Andrew Markham, again, he always likes to throw us a bunch of different questions. He always says, choose what you want, but they're always pretty good, so most of them make them in. How detrimental is Flow Sports streaming to CAA, and where do they rank, and where they rank nationally? From a ranking standpoint, I don't think it's detrimental. But from eyeballs on the games, it's a killer. And we know it's all just same as ESPN Plus. It's broadcast produced by the schools. But the quality of the broadcast in the CAA give Flow the bad name too. I mean, JMU, we had a great broadcast, but you still couldn't see it if you didn't get Flow and you were out of the area. I think it's Maine, and it might even be Rhode Island, has the one camera up high on the 50, and they just just scales. Is Maine okay?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they probably don't have like good internet in Orono. You know, it's probably frozen more than North Dakota. So, yeah, just the one camera. So, I think it definitely hurts eyeballs, but I don't think it hurts where they rank nationally.
No one's watching that shit. No one's watching Flow Sports. Flow Sports stinks. Their social media team stinks. It's the worst broadcast entity out there. It is absolutely god awful. I hate Flow Sports. I fucking hate Flow Sports, and it pisses me off that they have the broadcast rights. I pay for ESPN Plus. I want to be able to watch the goddamn games. I want to be able to watch the games. I paid for Flow during the pandemic, and it was the biggest waste of money. And I will never spend my money on that. If you want to get the eyeballs and people to watch and invest in their former programs, for the love of God, please go with ESPN Plus. And I don't know what the broadcast deal, how detrimental it is, and maybe the drop off. And hell, I would argue that it probably hurts their ability to negotiate with ESPN Plus or like a CBS Sports because they're sticking with Flow, because it's like, if you want more eyeballs, you got to take less money. They have that leverage. Those companies have that leverage of like, well, go ahead, take more money, but no one's going to watch the product that you're putting out there. And that's probably what happens in these negotiations.
Yeah, for sure. Quick one here. Can you and I pull an upset this week over South Dakota State? I think we all agree no.
No.
Dustin Perman.
They technically could. I mean, will they? No, probably not.
1% chance.
They? Sure. But I think we all would go South Dakota State across the board.
Not bet on that game.
Yeah, me saying that, though, I'm probably going to jinx that. And Sean and I are probably going to say that on the show, too, and we'll probably jinx the Jackrabbits.
Yep, you're welcome. That.
Yeah. All right. On the next one, does the CAA end up with more playoff teams in the Big Sky? All right. Kyle, I'll let you start. Joe, counter. It'd be a Big Sky to CAA, guys.
Potentially. I mean, I doubt it. I think right now there's four locks from the Big Sky. That Montana, especially if they get an upset at the end of the year, there's that fifth team. I think the Big Sky is better than the CAA this year. I think the Big Sky is the best conference. But the CAA has a lot of decent teams, like I just said. But I do have three of them ranked between 22 and 24. There's going to be some chaos at the end of the year. I would say there's a higher chance that both end with the same amount than any one of them, maybe over the other. But if I had to pick CA or Big Sky, which one has a better chance to end with more, I'm probably going to lean on the Big Sky.
I think that what you're saying is likely more realistic. However, and I know I it's hard for me to like mentally map out what it would take for all these teams, those six teams that are being ranked right now. Because obviously one of them, some of them are going to play each other and beat them and mess up their resumes. I think it's possible though. Like I think it's like, it's definitely possible. And I think that there's six competitive teams right now that should or could line up with any team in the playoff seating. Like there's not a weak team in those six that like, if they went out there would get embarrassed against a South Dakota State or a North Dakota State. They would at least show up and fight for four quarters. And then maybe some of them would lose by a couple of scores, but realistically probably the Big Sky. But my heart of course is going to lean for the CAA in this.
I would love to see it. The UC Davis versus sixth team from the CA. That would be a fantastic game.
So probably be New Hampshire or Richmond. Like I think that they beat UC Davis.
I would take UC Davis. They went toe to toe with South Dakota State. I mean, and they've beaten every single bad team by like 50.
That's fair.
It's interesting, but yeah, I think they're both solid. I think both of them are going to have four plus. But I think there's a higher chance Big Sky ends with five because Montana's name and brand at 7-4, even though they have they have no resume wins. If they end 7-4, I don't think they should be in the playoffs. They're probably still going to get in. Their AD is on the committee. I know it says he's supposed to be out when they're voting. Politics will be involved at 7-4. I think Montana gets in and that'd be the fifth team.
All right. On to the next. Haven't talked about Incarnate Word for a while. They showed they're not just an air raid offense with over 300 yards rushing and passing this week. I think they missed the passing by a little bit. But still, they did run for exactly 300 yards. And the defense only allowed one touchdown, and I know it was Texas A&M Commerce, but they also beat the team that Incarnate Word lost to in southeastern Louisiana. So does it show they're a little bit more well-rounded than we have initially thought about Incarnate Word?
Yeah, I saw him live. This is a very good team. I saw him live when also Lindsey Scott was injured. He was hot, limping off the field every drive, and he's still torched Prairie View, right? I think they're an extremely good team. The main reason why we just haven't talked about them is because this is the really bad portion of their schedule where they're just supposed to beat up everyone and beat them up by a lot. Yeah. So unfortunately, when you are a good team and you're playing, the back half of your schedule is just dog crap, probably not going to mention your team as much. But I do think this is a very, very solid program, especially when they're healthy and they're firing on all cylinders. They could beat you in a lot of different aspects of this game.
Yeah, I think they're definitely really well-rounded. And it's just easy to say, like, oh, air raid, Lindsey Scott's thrown for a million touchdowns. But no, they got athletes. They got a lot of athletes on that roster, and they deserve to be in the conversation as one of the best teams in the country, the way that they've looked. They can't do what they did against Southeastern Louisiana, and hopefully Lindsey Scott gets fully healthy by the time the playoff comes around.
Well, that's good answers there. Yeah, I think you, Incarnate Word, is definitely a team that if they've got a fully healthy Lindsey Scott, they can hang with anybody in the country. Is it possible the Valley gets two teams in, or at this point where the max be three? Adam Peterson, he's hoping that third one will be his Illinois State Redbirds, faithful fan. They've clearly eclipsed what I thought they were going to do. But Kyler, I know you think there are only two. You want to expand any further? Do you think that makes your point?
I think there's only two good teams from the Valley. I do think the Valley will get more than two teams in the playoffs. I do think, you know, the Missouri Valley name, it holds more weight than the actual teams in the conference this year. If there's UND at 7-4, I do think they're in. They're going to have a top five strength of schedule. No real good wins, but they're going to have a top five strength of schedule. They're going to be in the Missouri Valley, which that name does carry weight. So, yeah, I definitely think there's going to be more than two teams, but I don't think there's two top 20 teams in the, or more than two top 20 teams in the Valley right now. I do believe that.
I think the max is definitely three. And we've talked about it a ton on this show. Definitely maximum three, but I'm going to keep saying until the end of the season, there's only really two good teams in this conference. It feels weird to say it, but those
first
are the best
year
two
for
teams.
There's a first for everything. This is a first year. I don't think it's good at all.
Yeah. Rough year for the Missouri football conference.
Speaking of, the Valley will stick there. Do Bison drop any of their last three games and throw the playoff picture upside down? So the last three games this week, they are at Western Illinois. They're not dropping that. Then they're at Southern Illinois. Probably not. But Jekyll and Hyde, Southern Illinois, you never know. And then hosting North Dakota. I feel like they're going to run the table the rest of the way and secure a seed.
Yeah, I don't think there's almost no debate. And I feel like it's trivial to even fully analyze this. It's very long shot that they lose any of these games. They played their game. They played the Missouri Valley Football Conference championship game already. And it was in the middle of the season, and they're going to finish out, and they're going to go to the playoff.
Yeah, I think I agree. All right, next question from Garrett Meyer. A little shout-out for Joe. He loves listening to Hack City. He would like to rank the odds to make the playoffs in order of the following teams. He's got six listed because he put a bonus in. Illinois State, UC Davis, Montana, Southern Illinois, Stephen F. Austin, and Northern Iowa.
This is a meaty question. Garrett, I appreciate you saying that you enjoy listening to the show. It really means a lot. We always love people that give us feedback. If I were to rank these, give me UC Davis, Montana, SIU, Illinois State, SFA, and I'm not even putting UNI on that. I'm not putting Northern Iowa on that at all. They have been so bad this year, and it sucks because I really love that UNI program and the results that – well, that was bad voice crack. The results that they have produced. It's been a long day. the results that they usually produce, but I don't think they even belong in that discussion.
Kyle, would you change that order at all?
Unfortunately, I mean, Davis, because of their out-of-conference schedule, is quite a bit more difficult than Montana. They're going to have one less loss no matter what than Montana, which that does – paint a picture. So they are probably not going to be in the playoffs. Now, if they upset Sac State, then that completely changes everyone's mind. But as of right now, I don't think anyone's going to pick UC Davis to upset Sac State. So I'd probably say in this order, out of those, probably Montana has the best option, even though their resume would absolutely stink if they lose to Montana State, because they're going to beat Eastern. They're going to lose to Montana State most likely, unless they win. Then, of course, they're 8-3 and 100% deserving. That changes everyone's mind. But at 7-4, they're probably still in. What's crazy is UNI, they're not beating South Dakota State. If they can upset South Dakota State, they're in the playoffs, because I think they beat South Dakota. So if UNI can upset South Dakota State this year, and we're waiting for that one hiccup from SDSU that normally happens, UNI's in the playoffs. If not, they're not in the playoffs. So for this, yeah, Montana, unfortunately, Illinois State, UC Davis, and then SFA, you're only getting in if you win your conference, and who knows what's going to happen with there. Southern Illinois, you need an upset. UNI, you need an upset, and none of us are betting on you to have that upset.
Yep, I think that's pretty much it. And Northern Iowa, you know, the classic back into the playoffs type of team. So we'll keep our eye on them. But
who knows?
You never know. Jason Plotkin wants to know, where does South Dakota State's famed Hobo Day rank amidst FCS homecoming traditions? I don't know. I mean, it's cool in South Dakota to be a hobo. I don't know.
I got to say, I went to this thing last year. This is the game that Sean and I went to. It might be at the top. It honestly might be at the top. And I haven't experienced enough homecoming traditions. And I want to experience more homecoming traditions, a part of our trip series that Sean and I do. And that was a really fun experience. Like, I've never been at a crowd for any football environment that's like that. It's just so unique. It was fun. I put it at the top. I mean, I don't know what JMU and Eastern Washington are like, but
drinks.
Nothing crazy. Not as rambunctious as Hobo Day. It's just drinking.
It's just a lot of drinking. That is literally it at Eastern. So you just get drunk. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, hey, Joe's been there, so I think we can take his assessment over anything I would think. So
now he did say Campbell was a better environment than SDSU. I remember that.
No.
Listen to it on Hack City. If you guys want to listen to Joe DeLeon on Hack City, he said Campbell, better environment, better stadium, better fans, better drinking.
Everything. Absolutely not. I will never go back to Campbell University ever. That was. I'm still tilted. I spent the amount of money that I did to go to that place. I am like, I felt bad being negative about it, but like, I'm past that now and I'm annoyed because I spent too much money booking a last second flight to get to butt fuck nowhere, North Carolina, and do nothing for 2 days with Sean in a hotel room. It was terrible.
I love it. Sorry, man. Sorry, I didn't bring back the bad memory.
it's a scar that every time it gets reopened, it will incite a reaction. I did get a nice T-shirt though, and I like the T-shirt. But other than that place stinks.
There we go. We'll go to a little bit more upbeat question, a non-football question from the Rev Dustin Helton. Top three bands/musicians you've ever seen live.
I don't know if I've even seen three total.
Not a concert guy?
Not really. Well, because like, you got to take into account that, like, you know, I'm playing football, and then after playing football, I went into a pandemic. So like let me think if I can even name the three concerts I've been to. I've been to Darius Rucker. I've been to, oh my God, I can't even remember what the other ones were. There were two others that I went, like two rappers at URI. I'm not a big concert person. I know that's the worst answer, and I wish I had known that Dustin was going to ask this, and I would have better prepared for it. And I wish I looked at that question on the list, but I honestly can't remember all the concerts I've been to. I'm more of a football game guy. I'd rather go to a football game than a concert.
That's fair.
I'm going to pick. So for like bands, Shinedown is probably the best band I've ever seen live, because a lot of rock bands, they sound like complete trash live. Shinedown sound just like you would hear on the radio, and I forgot how many hits they had. I was like, oh, I know this. Phenomenal concert. For rap, I had a good time at Summer Jam back when I was a kid and Lil Wayne was out. So, you know, that was in his, you know, his high peak in 2007-ish. So that was always a pretty good time. The third. Dude, I don't know, but any concert in the Gorge. So if you ever, you know, go to the West Coast, if you want to have a good time, go look up the Gorge Amphitheater. So if Matt Frazee's editing this, put a picture of it on here. It doesn't matter who's playing. It's going to be the best concert you've ever seen in your life, even if it's a dog shit, horrible concert. Amazing. Go look up the Dancing Man at Sasquatch at the Gorge River Amphitheater. You'll see how much of a good time you can have at the Gorge. So that's it. There's two bands, and that's about it.
Yeah, I've been to a bunch. I mean, I used to take my wife to a lot, so we've seen. I mean, just I'm a country fan, but I'm going to go a few different ways. Obviously, for me, number one, because to me he's the king, George Strait. As a country fan, I've seen George Strait. That was great. From somebody who's blown up since I've seen them. And
Aaron Carter?
No, but Chris Hammond will appreciate this one. I have seen Taylor Swift, and I know that she is now a phenomenal performer. She was an opener at one of the concerts I went to. So, yes, I have seen Taylor Swift live. And then to go kick it back, when I went to the Winter Classic a few years ago, probably 10 years ago now almost, I did see Billy Idol perform at one of the intermissions. And, you know, he's kind of wow. like an icon. So, you know, I have to kind of go with Billy Idol. So I went, you know, three different ways, but, you know, obviously I can never go wrong with George Strait as a country fan.
There you go.
Our final quick hit question. Brendan just wants to know, Joe, coming to Frisco?
It is a 90% yes as of right now. I am so upset with how bad of an experience I had at Campbell. I need a palate cleanser and I need to go to something fun. And I unintentionally, Campbell has not marred my perception of FCS football. I'm not saying that, but I am just so distraught from that trip that, like, I need to go watch a good FCS football game with real excited FCS football fans who like to drink and have fun for me to feel better about FCS football. That's it. I'm trying to get there, and I just need to book my ticket and figure that stuff out. The determiner here is if Sean comes, and because of his current work situation, because he works on Sundays producing the college football show that he does, he may not be able to, cause isn't this year it's on a Sunday, or is that next year?
It's Sunday. Yeah. It's Sunday this year. Yep.
Yeah. That might disrupt it unless he just comes for the week and then leaves. But, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Cause it's during, you know, playoff time for FBS. So
yeah, it'll be like the day before the FBS Natty. It's usually the exact, right. like that Monday night is the FBS, but,
oh yeah. Shit. Wait, is it actually?
It might be. I think it is.
Or that's the week after. I don't remember.
I need to check that because that might I need to look this up. Wait.
So we might have just thrown Joe for a big old loop here, Brendan.
No.
TBD, I think he wants to go, but we'll see.
Well, because just for some context here. It's in the college football national championship is in LA this year. And so, like, I have to be here the whole week for Radio Row stuff. Yeah, it's the 9th. Oh. Yep. So that just went down to zero.
Well, there it goes.
90% to zero in 5 seconds. Good yeah, job, Humber.
We break news here on the FCS Fans Nation Big Boy Podcast.
That ruined my night. Oh, that ruined my night. I'm sorry, Brendan. I'm sorry, guys. But we'll see. Maybe I can work around it. We'll figure it out.
That's right. Hey, the door is still open. And
right.
We have one last little thing left, and that's to predict our game of the week.
This is the matchup you should be paying attention to. This is the FCS Fans Nation Game of the Week.
Another week, another huge matchup in the Big Sky. This time is number 2 Sacramento State going to number 5 Weber State. And Joe, don't worry. If you and Sean put this on FCS Miss, I will keep the same pick I make today. And I'm going to go first just because it'll make Kyler happier. I'm gonna take the home team. I think Weber State, they beat themselves with some – less than ideal long snapping, shall we say, against Montana State. And I know, yes, Montana State, you won the game. You made the plays. Congratulations. But Weber State, outside of those mistakes, they win that game. I know, blocking the back here, but they're not going to do it again. And Sacramento State has shown a penchant to turn the ball over. They've shown a penchant to blow a late lead, have to come back late. So they haven't been as consistent. And I think I'm going to go with Weber State in like a 24-20 type of game. Kyler?
This game's real fun because we saw what Montana State did against Weber State. And if there's one other team in maybe the FCS that has as strong of a rushing game as Montana State, it's Sacramento State. And it's kind of the only difference is you don't just have to worry about the quarterbacks. They also have arguably one of the best running backs in the season, or at least having one of the best running back seasons this year. Now, the caveat to that is I still think Sac State's passing defense department isn't that great? And we've actually seen a young Barron passing pretty well, being pretty effective. Their offense is quite a bit better than it's been the last few years. They're actually capable throwing the ball down the field. If Josh Davis is healthy, he can run just as good as anyone else. But man, watching Montana State run all over Weber makes me a little nervous. So all of that said, I'm still picking Weber. I think Weber is just a slightly more balanced team. They can throw, they can run, they can play defense. And I don't think we'll ever see that type of special teams play out of Weber again, because they're normally one of the better special teams teams in the Big Sky. So I don't think we'll see that type of a hiccup again. But man, this is a good game. This is a 50-50 game. Don't bet on this game. If you're a bettor, it could go either way. You're probably going to lose money. Whoever you bet on, the other team's probably going to win. But yeah, give me Weber by literally 3 points. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, and if you do bet on this game, go to Bet Online and listen to Joe's show for how to do it. But Joe, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, to keep it, I think, like really simple, because it's like it's a game that has just so many things that come into it because of how good these programs have been this year. I don't hold that loss against Weber State because of the special teams woes. They won that game. If it wasn't for that, they won that football game, and it sucks to lose in that fashion. They've moved on. It could be a rallying point, and it looks like a rallying point for this team. They have the advantage of playing at home. I think that Sacramento State gets their first loss. Weber has that ability to create turnovers, and Sacramento State, they turn the ball over even a couple times. They're going to be taken out of this game. So I definitely lead Weber State. Clean day on special teams, no issues. They have the best odds in this one.
All right, it's a clean sweep. Matthew Frazee's going to have to put his pick out on Twitter so that we can keep up. So that's going to do it for tonight's podcast. Joe, really appreciate you taking the time to join us. We'll take a couple minutes and tell people where they can find you all over the place throughout the week.
Yeah, at Joe DeLeon on Twitter. And then you can find the Hack City YouTube channel, which we've expanded our coverage a little bit. We do college football stuff, college recruiting, a lot of things that are going up on that channel. So be sure to hit that subscribe button on that and check it out. We'll have our preview episode and a recap episode coming out this week with Sean and I for the FCS games. But thanks guys for having me on. You know, I was excited and I'd love to come on again soon during maybe at the end of the season or something. But this was fun and, you know, always excited to talk about FCS football with anyone who's excited about it as much as Sean and I are.
Yeah, very much. Thank you for joining us. Kyler, any closing thoughts?
Nope. I'm glad we finally got the hacks on. we appreciate you coming on, man. Yeah, it'd be fun to get you and Sean on maybe during one of our playoff episodes where we're pushing like 10,000 views for some of those ones. So it'd be fun to get you guys on there because you guys have one of the most entertaining shows about the FCS. I prop up a lot of pro like Blue Bloods, a phenomenal show. You guys, phenomenal show. You guys are part of my weekly listens. Please, guys, if you're going to listen to anyone, listen to Hack City, listen to Blue Bloods, and of course, listen to us, you jerks. but yeah, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Thanks. It means a lot. It really means a lot, you guys saying that and the support and everything. But yeah, of course. Thanks again for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for another episode. We will look forward to another good week of games, and we'll talk to you next week. Boom.
Thank you for listening to the FCS Fans Nation podcast. Make sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on your preferred listening platform, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, or even YouTube. And make sure to follow our FCS Fans Nation social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you for listening to the premier podcast for FCS football. Boom.